Welcome, everyone, to the Dorsey Wright Podcast for July 5th, 2017. This is Paul Keaton joining me, Jay Gragnani. And there were a lot of fireworks over the kind of quasi-long break here, whether they came from your hometown or North Korea. A lot of things being fired into the air here.
That there has been. Some more attractive than others.
That's right.
It's hard to believe. You know, it's always this time of year, 4th of July. My viewing of big fireworks shows hasn't gotten back to where it once was with the little ones needing to be in bed before actual dark. So a lot of my firework viewing is either in my backyard with little fireworks that they sell in some counties in Virginia or on the TV. And it's always a time of year, you know, you sit back and you reflect and you think, geez, you know, 2017 is halfway over.
Halfway over, and you're resetting the clock on the stroller front, so I don't see you getting out to the big fireworks anytime soon. But even as all the, everything that has gone on that has grabbed headlines, and whether they be political tensions or whether they be things like the North Korea, the more geopolitical tensions, the volatility for the U.S. market has remained not just relatively low, it's remained historically low. Measures such as the CBOE Volatility Index, tracked as VIX on our database, you know, that got down below 10 at some points in Q2, and it's still not too far above that right now. So you've had certainly some volatility, specifically in some of the big technology stocks late in the year, but unquestionably, while that there may have been volatility, technology was still one of the strongest trends in Q2.
Yeah, and you know, it has been a strong trend for a while. And that's what, you know, I think back in 2016, you know, it was a tough year in many fronts, but there's a lot of changes. There was a lot of changes with respect to sector leadership. There was volatility was higher. You had obviously change in the political landscape here in the U.S. And you look back on the first half of 2017, and you think, yeah, I mean, technology certainly was a stable trend in the first quarter. It was a stable trend in the second quarter, and you know, there's a lot of that in 2017 that we've seen happen in terms of you know, stability of the market. If you look, you know, just across the board so far this year, there's been a lot of areas that have rewarded investors, i.e., you know, had positive returns. And there's only been a very small subset of the U.S. equity market that has really fallen on the sword and has caused negative returns through the first half of the year. And you know, kind of the big glaring space has been energy from a big macro sector, and the other area that has caused underperformance from not only absolute but relative has been a lot of the retailers. You know, retailers have been under constant pressure, continuous pressure, no small part due to one of the largest, arguably, technology names, albeit probably still classified as a retailer, being Amazon. You know, so.
Yeah, that's
I think we can argue if Amazon's a retailer or a technology company, but
that's, you know, in Amazon, it's such an interesting model, and it's creeped into so many parts of our lives. And I was reading recently that more than 50% of every online or e-commerce dollar is spent through Amazon currently, and that's, you know, before they really actively get into the grocery store market that they're now in and any number of other markets. But it's interesting how Amazon grew and how they have, you know, they created by, you know, with something, you know, pretty simple and, you know, digital books, and expanded and expanded and eventually expanded into being recognized for both their proprietary products and then also for being, you know, a pretty low cost option for, you know, virtually any other product that you could imagine. But that's a whole nother story altogether. I think coming back to what's worked and what hasn't worked, obviously Amazon has been a stock that's largely worked this year, but in the sector that largely hasn't, obviously, was energy. In fact, every single, if you looked at every single sector ETF on the U.S. listed world here, in, you know, excluding things like leverage products and what have you, but of all the sector products, the only ones that are down double digits this year are energy. And there's all, you know, energy has different forms from, you know, MLPs to, you know, exploration names, to oil service names and what have you. But of every sector ETF that's down double digits this year, it's energy related. And of every sector ETF that's up double digits this year, by and large, they are technology and healthcare related. The vast majority, not every, but the vast majority are technology and healthcare related. Technology is obviously something that you would expect. It's been very highly ranked for the, not just this year, but really for much of the past 5 years. Healthcare, however, that's a bit of a different animal. That was a sector that really came into the year, at best middling, and at worst out of favor, you know, for the first few months of the year. And it crossed above energy in terms of group scoring in February, and it really hasn't looked back. And now when we look at this year, for the first quarter and the second quarter, it's the same sector ETF that's the best performer in each of those. And that's a biotech ETF, XBI. Mm.
That's interesting. I mean, biotechs, obviously, you talk about volatility, and if there's one area of the market that historically has had a higher volatility, not bad, but just generally has higher volatility to it, it is the biotech space. And it's, you know, among the groups out there that as much as a 25% gain in a first half of the year can be quiet, I think that the biotech story really has been this year, yeah. Because it has come back really from being out of favor. It's come back from being not necessarily the big leadership group. The it hasn't grabbed the headlines at least yet of people like Janet Yellen or Hillary Clinton making big bets and calls on the biotech space in general. But it, you know, it's been a space that has done very well. You've seen it scores. You look at XBI score is you know high 5.9, and certainly an area to consider and take a look at just from a relative strength perspective. Is certainly something that is an area that has pushed the market this year to new highs. And that's, you know, something to be said for the groups that you're looking for leadership trends out of. You know, it's often there's been a lot of stuff that has worked. There's been a smaller subset of stuff that has really been the driving force behind the new highs. And it's been the big technology companies and then also a lot of these healthcare and biotech specifically.
Yeah, and maybe the biotech thing is maybe quiet because it wasn't really one of the first areas that people looked at in terms of what's going to do well or what's going to do poorly under Donald Trump and his administration.
Yeah,
and there was a lot that was perceived to be important relating to some of the other sectors, and you know anything that was very extremely rate sensitive, for instance, that was something. Certainly, the financials were something that I think many people viewed as very sensitive to the outcome of the past election. But you know, biotechs are kind of their own little animal, and this year they've been a very high performing animal, and a lot of things have been generally buoyant in the U.S. market. And again, the real exception to that, as you mentioned, some of the retailers, some of the REITs, and really the energy sector. Overseas, this year has become very interesting as well, in that you've had a lot of markets that had been very dormant or very problematic for the past few years, and they've begun to come to life to the point where 6 months into the year, you've got a number of broad international benchmarks that are up significantly more than the U.S. benchmarks. And the Vanguard MSCI Emerging Markets ETF is up 14% year-to-date. The iShares MSCI EAFE Index Fund, which represents the developed part of the world, is up about 13% this year. So there hasn't been a big benefit skewing either emerging or developed, but there has been a decent benefit for those that have had or increased their international equity allocation so far this year.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because the first half, so the first quarter of 2017, the story internationally was emerging markets. And, you know, while when you look at the numbers and you look at everything, emerging markets still have the edge over developed. The second quarter of this year, what the story was really about developed markets joining the party and frankly contributing to some of the returns that we've seen this year across the board, and very specifically Latin America was one of the strongest groups within the international space, has fallen off a bit, such that, you know, Brazil was, you know, among the worst performers in the second quarter, and you know, started seeing some of that rotation, whereas things like you know, even South Korea, things like China, things like Spain, were those at the top of the list in terms of second quarter international ETFs, you know, even Europe making the list of top 10. And so that was, you know, internationally, while you've seen a lot of stability within the U.S. equity markets, the change, if you will, that's really taken place underneath the surface of international is just seeing some of the international developed markets come back into favor and begin to contribute to those returns.
Yeah, only one major international market that is down significantly year to date, and that's Russia. The symbol RSX, the VanEck Vectors Russia ETF, is down almost 10% on a year-to-date basis. And obviously that substantially lags both the emerging markets and the developed market benchmarks. And you know, much of that move came in the second quarter when both it and Brazil were the two worst performing markets internationally over the second quarter. And Brazil, of course, much of that loss came in one day, in one session, as their currency virtually collapsed in one day. And obviously plenty of on the geopolitical front down there currently, but you know, by and large, not a whole lot of markets that have globally that have, you know, produced a ton of volatility or a ton of losses this year, and certainly over the past couple months, just Russia and Brazil is really the outliers on the downside. But South Korea, by contrast, South Korea, China, Spain, all of those markets up 8% or more on the second quarter this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when you look, I think the other big, you think of equities and then kind of bonds being the other big group that has been in the headlines this year, and at least certainly an area that is very, very important to pretty much every investor out there, is what's going on with interest rates, what's going on in the bond market. And you look at just, you know, kind of the core aggregate bond funds are up, call it a percent and a quarter so far this year, just from price return standpoint, not looking at total return. But this has been an area that we've seen really this year that there's been a lot of opportunity underneath the surface if you're willing to look for it. And it's an area or a concept, I guess, if you will, when you think about sector rotation and finding leadership and looking for areas of opportunity, something we talk a lot about in terms of the U.S. sector market, in terms of international countries, finding leadership, in terms of fixed income. What we often see and hear is that, you know what, I'm just going to buy, this fund and an aggregate bond fund that's safe money. But, the more and more we look at the bond market, especially when you look at the ETF landscape of the bond market, has continues to mature and grow in terms of the offering and availability of product in that space, where there's a lot of opportunities in the bond market that you think that you wouldn't necessarily always think about. Things like convertible bonds, thing like emerging market debt up 6, 7, 8% this year, depending on the fund. Things like preferreds are something else that are certainly up there, as well as corporate bonds. So, that's certainly something to consider. And we've got a couple fixed income models on the website. And I think as many conversations as we have around interest rates and the uncertainty of interest rates, really, that has been over the past 12 months, with interest rates, you know, literally all over the board, we've seen a lot of stability in the fixed income models, and just letting relative strength be the guide in terms of which areas of the bond market we want to overweight in the portfolio, which areas of the bond market we want to underweight. And the glaring trend there within the bond market really has been underweighting or avoiding U.S. Treasuries this year, and being overweight some of the areas that we mentioned, things like convertibles, things like high yields, and things that tend to be less correlated to the actual interest rate.
Well, you can go beyond the word underweighting and say unweighting.
Unweighting,
because that was, I know at least the State Street fixed income model, which holds four pieces equal weighted across the fixed income landscape, and it can own, you know, any of those bond subsectors that you just mentioned. Its benchmark is, you know, the largest weight of an aggregate bond index is U.S. Treasuries, whereas that model today has 0% in U.S. Treasuries. And so that's, that's the story really behind sector rotation, is that it has a tremendous ability to act tremendously different than a benchmark. And, you know, we know that relative strength as an input is something that can contribute to not just different performance, but actually outperformance over time as you go through multiple market cycles. But that's also that's a big draw, and that's also something that I think makes the sector models an attractive component for many advisors, that it is something that it owns things for different reasons, and therefore it owns things at different times. And so these models have the ability to overweight a technology or to pick up a biotechnology trend if that remains a stable contributor of the U.S. market. And so, you know, that ability to rotate across sectors, it's probably as meaningful for the fixed income world as it is for any other.
Yeah.
Because most areas of the U.S. equity market are at least somewhat positively correlated to something like the S&P or the S&P equal weighted. However, in the bond world, that's not at all the case. You've got elements of the bond market that are inversely correlated to U.S. treasuries, and or at least non-correlated to U.S. treasuries. And in fact, there's probably six or seven subsectors that really have very, very little correlation to the U.S. long-dated treasury market. And so that means you really have an opportunity to build a fairly diversified fixed income basket with things that really don't behave like a traditional bond benchmark. So it can be a great ballast during periods where you might expect rate-sensitive things to struggle. And right, obviously, you know, long-dated U.S. treasuries are among the most rate-sensitive of things out there.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up, and let's look at maybe the best and worst of the S&P 500 this year. There are, through Monday, so a little past halfway, I guess, so through July 3rd, there are five stocks in the S&P 500 that are up more than 50%. Care to guess? I'll give you a hint. One of these may or may not be related, may or may not have hosted our last broker institute in Las Vegas.
Hosted?
Well,
venue.
All right. Okay. They own the sand
Wind
beneath
reserves.
Our feet. So Wind is among the stocks that is up more than 50% this year. There you've got, you know, really a smorgasbord of things. You've got a pharmaceutical company in Vertex, which is actually the best performer, up 74% this year. You've got Activision, which is a video game maker. Mm-hmm. You've got a railroad company in CSX. There has been, you know, quite a few. Quite a few sectors that have contributed. And so at the top of the performance board, you don't have just one sector represented. At the other end, it's the names, as we mentioned. You mentioned that retailers were struggling this year. Macy's is probably the child that has struggled the most in that retail group, at least amongst large cap stocks. It's down 33% year to date. Anadarko Petroleum and Transocean, APC and RIG, those are two energy names, both down more than 30% this year, with Transocean being down the most at 41%. And then another name, which relates to the Amazon story, but Kroger. Kroger is also a stock that is down more than 30%. One of just six stocks within the S&P 500 that are down more than 30% year to date.
Interesting.
So there you go, and there you have it. And that's it for our Dorsey Wright podcast this week. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. If you want more details on some of the different performance trends that we've seen amongst the ETF world, come check out our daily equity report for July 5th, and we will publish the rankings for best and worst in each of the major asset class categories for ETFs. And as always, we'll be back with you again next Wednesday.